happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother. Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan. Getting a Monday morning started off for you. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs started this weekend. We are all three here. We are currently trying to locate Bo Bishop. Maybe he's out there doing something for the Browns GM job that he also has, because, you know, the NFL draft is this week. But we'll start in the NBA playoffs. Cavs off to a good start with a 97-83 win over the Magic on Saturday. That was the early game on Saturday, a 1 p.m. start for that one. And if you tuned in a little bit late after the game had started, there wasn't much to write home about. The Cavs got it into double digits. The Magic threatened them a few times late in the third quarter, but the Cavs push it to another big lead. Then a few times the Cavs had ballooned their lead and got and went back to single digits, but they really took care of business, and it was very different than the playoff experience last year for the Cavs, which was very refreshing to see. Donovan Mitchell leads all scorers with 30 points in the game, and the Cavs looked like a much different monster than they did last year against the Knicks in a mostly disappointing playoff series against New York, as they were bounced in the first round. So a 1-0 lead for them against the Magic. They play Tuesday night, game two. That's up in Cleveland. Sorry, correction. That is tonight, game two, up in Cleveland. They can get a 2-0 lead before they have to head back down to Orlando again. A much better spot than last year, and that's what we're looking for from the Cavs right now, to go out there and find a way to actually win a playoff series, build on what they've been trying to do. Donovan Mitchell comes in. It's his second year here. Again, everybody disappointed with that last year. Can they actually put it together and get it going in a week that wasn't great for the NBA playoffs as far as competitive stuffs go, but it was nice to see that the Cavs could right the ship and figure out a way to get a game one victory.
Yeah, a different team. Obviously, you're facing the Knicks last year in a much less physical squad with the Orlando Magic. Helps that Orlando didn't make any of their shots. I think Cleveland had a 20-point lead at one point in the third, and you watched it dwindle to about 9, and Magic never really made it any closer than that.
Again, they shot like 33% for the game, I think.
Helps that you limit them, or they limit themselves, right? Like, and this is going to be a different test than you'll have, than you had last year with the New York Knicks. But still, look, this is going to be an ugly series. Like, I think I had said Cavs in 6 before. I'm going to stick with it, and tonight's going to be equally as ugly as what you saw on Saturday from both teams, really.
Yeah, and you that's the, like, the one thing that, like, is disappointing about it yesterday or on Saturday for the Cavs is I had it on. I also had the Michigan spring game on, which we'll talk a little bit later about in this show, but the Cavs were my second screen, and they really never, in it for a good reason, but they really never gave me a reason to really take my eyes off the primary screen and go to the Cavs, because they were just up by 15 basically the whole game.
All right, who do we blame for this?
I say Threes.
You think Threes is sabotaging me?
I bet his
from
key,
the grave.
I bet his key card
Woody
still works here, and he came in early this morning, or maybe his friend Bobby let him in, and he sabotaged something. Yeah,
yeah. There's a way we do this every day, and it's supposed to be ready to go, and I'm hearing. But then not. You guys can't hear me. You couldn't.
Yep.
So now we're on another portal, and we'll do the best we can. It's a damn shame.
Do you want to do the intro again, or do you want to play it? Or
No, the hell with it. Hell with it. You guys are 5 minutes in. Here's, I did have a hell of a story. So I had copious amounts of lacrosse. What I should have said is, we'll do it live on a Monday. Austin, 10:30. Chris Fedor, 9:30. I had so much lacrosse. Ridiculous amount. Friday night, lacrosse in kind of the rainy, gross. Saturday, Dublin, Emerald Fields, 3 games. And then we went to Ohio State, Michigan lacrosse on Saturday night. Michigan got us by one. Bit of sucked. But incredible venue there. Nick Myers, the program he's built, sensational. So then we get into Sunday. And here's the deal with this is youth sports in general, and it's probably a lesson for all the parents out there, is, and it's hard because you're a parent and you're watching your kid. Most of the officiating in youth sports, especially a sport like lacrosse that not a lot of people know the rules, I don't really know all of them. It's really hard because the officials don't necessarily know all of the rules. So they're picking it up as they go, and there's different rules for different age groups. For example, the 3-4s, which Beamsy's in, you cannot check. Okay. Can't check. So you can stick check, which means you can whack the stick, but you can't smoke a guy. Okay. So there was a team we played on Sunday that did not adhere to the rule of you cannot check. And they were clearly coached to check. Like they were trying to slam people into the boards. So the official who, and typically what happens is it's basketball officials become lacrosse officials. They kind of cross pollinate because there's some similarities in the sport. So the official didn't realize this right away. Our coach is really good and he got his attention and had it sorted out. And so all of a sudden there were a ton of penalties. So then the coach on the other team is, but when there's a penalty at 3-4, you're not a man advantage. It's just the kid has to come off. So he's out for like one sub and then he comes right back in and then he does it again. And so at one point our coach says to the other coach, maybe coach him up a little bit, is like the fourth third grader of ours, was devastated by a fourth grade A team. So then you fast forward to night game, hated rival, no names, please. We'll keep it out. Playing at 4 o'clock, kind of across town. They put the wood to us every time we play them. They put the wood to us, and they're a really good program. And it's a very tight game. And there's a play where in the third quarter, where we have the ball, there is a whack to the helmet, a whack to the helmet, which is a penalty. And in sixth grade, a penalty means you play with a man advantage, just like hockey, right? So you play with a man advantage for a minute or two, whatever it is. So a whack to the head. Well, as the whack to the head's happening, the kid who got whacked drops his stick and one of his gloves comes off. Okay. So apparently, and the lacrosse people can tell me this, if a glove comes off, then that's stop play. But the referee did not stop play. So our guy picked it up, wheeled it around because the flag was down for the whack to the head, wheels it around to an NBC actually scores a goal. So we go up 3-2. So as this happens, the coach on the opposing team is screaming at the official. Okay. As the screaming takes place, the official goes, you're a jackass, to the coach. to which the coach goes, you'll never work in this town again. To which in the middle of the third quarter, the referee just walks. He walks over, gets his backpack and walks off the field. Gone.
It's fine.
Gets in his car. Fine. I'm done. I'm out. So then one of the assistant coaches from the opposing teams goes running to his car. What does he pull out? Referee shirt. So everyone's going, our kids are going, wait a second, what? He's going to referee us? Our fans are losing their mind. In the back of my head, I'm thinking like, this guy knows how absurd this looks. So if anything, we are going to get more calls because of the look of this.
Yeah.
You know, it would be really a lot of onions.
He's going to overcorrect.
He's overcorrect. Yeah. Yes. Because to play it straight would be, he would just be absolutely buried. So like, he's going to overcorrect. And so the kids on the other team are yelling, he's certified, relax, he's certified. It was crazy.
That's what we're worried about, his certification.
Yeah. His certification. So he comes back on, and we actually won the game 3-2, and kind of the clinching play was they had too many men on the field, and he called it on his own team, which was the game clincher, and so we won 3-2 against a hated rival, which was fun, but that's not the end of it. So I get in my car, NBC and I, to come home, and I driving through town, and I get onto the freeway, and this red Mitsubishi old beat up Montero flies up right behind me, like right on my bumper, like sea bass type stuff. So I'm looking at it like NBC's completely unaware. He's happy. Guy kind of jets off a rest stop, and I think, okay, that's probably it. So then I go to get off the exit. Dude rolls up, all of a sudden he's back, rolls up right behind me. He's honking at me. And I'm initially thinking like, I'm not aware of who it is. I'm at a red light and he's honking. I'm like, dude, it's red light. What do you want me to do? Just massive birds. as many "you're number one" as I could get. And NBC goes, "Dad, he's flipping us off." I go, "Yeah, he sure is. This dude is pretty aggressive, right?" So I'm thinking, like, what do I do here? Do I run this red light? Is this? And this dude was honestly, I always tease my dad, "Your generation's the worst." I mean, it was straight out of his generation, like probably about mid to late 60s. Dude with like beard, white beard, like just, I don't know, who knows.
So did he want to turn right on red behind you, or did he want to go straight?
No. It would have been left on red. I was in the left lane. I couldn't go left on red.
No, you obviously can't. But what did he want to do? What did he want out of the situation?
I have no idea. I don't know if it was the make of the car. I don't believe I did anything illegal or anything that would cause this sort of reaction. So then he proceeds to open his car door, and I'm going, "Oh my God, like, are we gonna fight?"
Good thing you have lacrosse sticks.
Does this guy have a weapon? Like, you know, we're
don't worry, Bo, he's certified.
So I go, thankfully the light turns and I'm gone. Luckily the vehicle I have is pretty quick, 0 to 60. So I'm gone. And what was crazy is it was very clearly this dude was under the influence of something, because he then like was weaving in lanes, nearly hit a light pole, and then got right back on the freeway. And jeez, that was it. And I'm going, like, is this what this dude does? Just rolls up on people, chases him down, flips him off, and then goes back on the freeway and does it again? Because I didn't see this human coming from the lacrosse. I didn't see him coming through town. It happened like on the freeway is when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then got off the exit, did it all this stuff to me at NBC, and then almost hits a light post and then gets right back on the freeway.
I have no idea what's going through that person's head. Yeah.
Absolute nuts.
That's one of those stories, Bo, where in the moment, that sounds very frightening, but after the fact,
it's terrifying.
It is a very funny story, just it's ridiculous insane stuff, especially on top of everything else you said with your day. Now, one question
you'll
about...
You'll never work in this town again.
So they're supposed to pause if somebody loses a glove, you said.
I don't know. I don't know the rules well enough. The kid So what happened is it was a tomahawk to the helmet, clear as day.
Mm-hmm.
A referee drops the flag, penalty, but it's like hockey, right? It's lacrosse like hockey, like delayed penalty.
Right.
So you don't stop it unless there's a score or you lose possession, and then you enforce the penalty, just like hockey. Well, then what I think the other coaches were complaining about is his glove came off as he got impaled. Our guy's glove came off as he got impaled, and they said that it should have stopped right then. I don't know one way or another. I'm not going to pretend like I'm Paul Rabel. I don't know.
Yeah,
and Coach Myers would probably be able to.
Okay, so they were obviously doing the you should call that because it's the real rule, and they scored off of it. Okay,
yes,
so
yes,
they weren't doing it as actual care. They didn't care about the rule. They cared the other team scored.
I think so. That we hadn't beaten them in a while, and this age group hadn't beaten them ever. So it was a great game, thrilling game, but insanity. Absolute insanity on a Sunday. You guys mentioned off the top, the Cavaliers get the win, guards flying, big news out of the Buckeye basketball side of things. And I ran into Gene on Saturday at Ohio State lacrosse. I want to get into that a little bit too. We're off and running this time for real on a Monday, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We're the girthiest radio station in the history of radio. Uncomfortably girthy. This promo is uncomfortable. The Fan, Ohio's girth destiny. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey guys, it's Chops, and nope, I'm not going to pass out draft predictions today, at least not right now. I'm making a bolder prediction and an opportunity, one might say. How about setting a goal to lose 40 pounds by the fourth with Awaken 180? Has a different ring to it when you have a finish line, right? 40 by the fourth. Imagine this. Your scale shows 240 today. How about watching that dip to a cool 200 by Independence Day? Or maybe it's reading closer to 285 like my scale did. How would it feel seeing 245 by the fourth and on your way to losing 95 pounds just like I did? And I've now kept it off for an entire year with Awaken 180 because of that free maintenance that you get with them. Ringing Independence Day, shirt off, confident, a cracked beer and burger in hand. Celebrate reaching your goal, knowing you'll keep the weight off thanks to free support for life. 40 by the fourth, set your goal to attain it with your solution for weight loss. Awaken 180 Weight Loss, awaken180weightloss.com. Bishop and Friends, we're sponsored by Awaken 180, fast, sustainable weight loss without medications. The solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
So Saturday we played, we were up at Emerald Fields in Dublin, and we played at 5:10, and I would, I worked it out to where our entire team could go to the game. So we had like 64 people from our team who went to the game between Ohio State and Michigan. It was cold. It was chilly all day. Little bit chilly all day. But it's fine.
Because the sun was out the whole time.
It's one of those things. If the wind didn't blow, it would have been pristine. It would have been perfect. But the wind, the gusts were a little, they were a little brisk. So we get down there, and as you're walking in, I was explaining this to the boys and to Amy. You just have to remember that when I got here in 07, that 90% of what you see did not exist. It didn't. None of it was there. And as you're walking down there, and we turned right down Fred Taylor and parked, and then made our way over to the lacrosse stadium, which is just stunning. I mean, it's a stunning accomplishment, that lacrosse stadium that they built. And so too is Covelli. And so too is everything else that's around there. And I saw Gene. I wasn't able to talk to him. He was from a distance though, and I saw him walking. He was over at Ohio State Lacrosse, and he walked over to Covelli and kind of in the door there, because there was obviously a lot going on campus. I mean, he had, the tennis wins again this weekend. You had, it was men's volleyball. So like there was a lot of things going on. And then Ohio State, Michigan Lacrosse on Saturday night. And I was sitting there, and what occurred to me is, as Gene is winding it down, he had that great hour he had with Doug last week. This is the legacy. As an athletic director, you have two chances. It's hire the football and basketball coach, men's side predominantly, and then did you build buildings? Gene built a ton of buildings. He fundraised a ton of buildings. And what they now have from an athletic complex standpoint, boy, you'd put it up against any place in the country. I know they've got to do a new Woody at some point. I know that that's something that is in the hopper and probably needs to get done to be able to stay where you need to be at the top of the sport. The shoe is something that is going to be something that Ross Bjork's going to have to deal with somewhere down the line in terms of modernizing that and keeping that up to speed. Gene didn't build the shot. That's not on him. That's it. Andy Geiger
built that. Was that the turd he was talking about, like putting a gold painted coat on?
And the shot, at least in theory, is good. It just, in practice, is underwhelming, is the problem.
Now, he didn't say turd, but he said he had, like, painted gold or put lipstick on. It was the lipstick.
It was lipstick.
That was the pig he was talking about.
I think it was the Woody that he was referring to there.
Let's just say he was referring to the shot.
Yeah. But from a athletic director legacy standpoint, it's the buildings that he's going to lean on. When you look back 20 years from now on his time here, you're going to see those buildings. You're going to see the hire of Ryan Day. That is going to be a legacy one, right? Gene, for whatever reason, does not get a lot of credit for the Urban hire. Most people think that was most of the credit. It seems to go to like a booster, power booster thing, the Urban hire at that point. But the Ryan Day hire is absolutely Gene's. He had the Chris Holtmann hire, which looked good early and then petered out. And he's got the Jake Diebler hire. And I think him and Ross will probably split that one. And we'll see how that turns out going forward. But it'll be the buildings that will be the high point. When you write the history of Gene here, I think the thing that you're going to write first is that he built a lot of great buildings.
Yeah. I mean, all that land across, you know, where the shot is, but then going past it, basically, he gets credit for just about everything there across the street from his office in the Fawcett Center. The other thing that's interesting about a Gene Smith legacy, now that you mention it with the other half of that, with the hiring of the coaches, is for those big name coaches, the ones that we really circle and pay the most attention to, the men's basketball, the football coaches, only Chris Holtmann this year was sort of the one where like it was fully his decision to fire him. You know, yes. Jim Tressel and Tattoo Gate, Urban Meyer and everything that went on there. And that went up to like university board level. And then Thad Matta. Yeah, I can't even remember what they even labeled that as. But remember, it was in a weird time of the year. It wasn't really in response completely to the results on the basketball court. It was also a lot to do with Thad's health.
I'm trying to remember. We had
after a Rutgers loss in the Big Ten tournament.
But it wasn't like,
but it wasn't right away.
I think it was in like May, wasn't it?
Well, I know that the Holtmann hire did not happen until June, because I remember being at Muirfield and Threes and I, it was our first month on the air, and we were tracking down Billy Donovan planes.
On June 5th, 2017, Mata mutually agreed with Ohio State to step down as its head coach due to health issues. So yeah, that's a mutually agreed to step down. So he didn't even technically, you know, it's not in the record books as firing Thad Mata.
Right. There was pressure because it had, you know, from a recruiting and development standpoint, it wasn't what it used to be. And there's all Thad's health stuff was real. I mean, he was not, they couldn't travel in terms of they can't go to Maui. They couldn't go to the Bahamas. Everything had to be local, in terms of that. You know, it's interesting. Now that he's been at Butler for his second season, I haven't heard anything about, hopefully it's all great.
Yeah.
God willing, it's all great for him and he's okay. I mean, I went to a game over there a couple of years ago and saw him, looked about the same. But you know, he was at Indiana a little bit in administration there. He was there for a little bit. Yeah. So you're right. It's the Holtmann hire. He absolutely gets the secondary coaches, the predominantly non-revenue coaches, many of those have just crushed. And I'm sure that's probably painful for him when he has to say things like he said last week, where he said, like, look, you know, the non-football stuff, we may have to take a look at. I don't know if we can have the same expectations, because everything they've built over there, all the coaches that he's hired, all of those things are home runs. It absolutely is. And so to have to say out loud, like, hey, Ohio State's probably not going to be able to stay to this level in these sports in the future, because so much of our attention, so much of our assets, so much of our revenue has to go to football to make it right. You need to have a $20 million coaching staff.
I do think from that standpoint, though, for schools like Ohio State that do want to have that many, like, maybe we could think about just regionalizing the sports. And not everything has to be done at the national model that we do.
Yes.
Those higher revenue producing sports. You can play a lot of MAC schools. There's a lot of Big Ten schools that are only bus rides away. Like, can we pull down the budget that we put around those sports and hopefully keep them?
That's probably will be the logical thing, right? Like, everything won't be, I don't know how many of those guys charter, but yeah, you don't need to play across the country in a non-revenue sport. I think that's probably fair.
Even just the future of all of those as the football conferences start to consolidate and as the basketball starts to shift a little bit too, like, what becomes the future of all of them, not just in schools locally?
Yeah, no, valid. It's going to be, they're going to have to rethink it for sure, because playing non-revenue sports in Eugene, Oregon every year is not necessarily a recipe for success financially. The Cavaliers, pretty impressive over the weekend. Get a read on that team and the NBA from our good buddy Chris Fedor coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bobby Carpenter doesn't have a mullet, but he's knee-deep in mullet energy. Morning Juice with Bobby and Beamer.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan. Us. What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, here's what's up on a Monday edition. I'm not sure if I was surprised. I guess a little surprised. My hunch was that this was all buttoned up. But we talked about this when Aaron Bradshaw committed last week, the former number three player in the country, the five-star big from Kentucky, that when he came in, my assumption was that this was all going to be, this has all been discussed, and that both Bradshaw and Akpara, that they'd work together, you'd have Twin Towers kind of situation, rotate him through, and that there had been some dialogue to lead you to believe that that's the way that this thing would go. Apparently that was not the case, because Akpara hopped into the portal on Sunday, and I think was a bit of a surprise to most. I understand it from his perspective. In college basketball in 2024, can you play two bigs who are, you know, rim-running, shot-blocking bigs? Not really. I mean, hell, we saw that at Kentucky last year. They had three or four of those guys that were rim-running bigs, and that didn't work out so well because there's not enough minutes for them. And obviously, it's a challenge to put two guys who can't spread the floor on the court at the same time. And so all that to be said, though, I assume that when Bradshaw came in, there was conversation with Akpara, and they knew that he was coming in, too. He had pledged to come back. He was not going to jump into the portal, and now he has jumped into the portal. And I do think it's a bit of a surprise, and I do think when you look at this roster now, it is fair to say, was all of this a net gain? Because if you think about who's out and who's in, it's a bit of a tricky conversation to have. We will get into that conversation coming up just shortly here. Want to do a little NBA talk with our good buddy Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, on the Brian Heating and Cooling System Fan Guest Hotline. Hey, pal, as you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. Central Ohio, we'll jump on a bandwagon. You just give us a reason. We can't wait, especially where the NBA is concerned. This was in the years that LeBron was up there. It was usually the number two or three market in NBA finals or playoffs in the whole country. So they'll jump on. For the fans jumping on this Cavaliers bandwagon now, give me a little Reader's Digest on this season and this approach heading into the postseason?
Yeah, Bo, it was a wild season for the Cavs. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of ins and outs, a lot of stops and starts. Missed a lot of guys because of injuries. So there wasn't really a great opportunity for this team to figure out who they were, who they could be. There wasn't a big opportunity for J.B. Bickerstaff to understand like all the things that he wanted to know about this team going into the postseason. But that was their reality. And I think given everything that they dealt with throughout the course of the regular season, the many injuries that they had to overcome, it wasn't just injuries that piled up, right? It was injuries to their most important and most meaningful players. And some of them coincided with each other. But no playoff team missed as many games due to injury, suspension, whatever, than the Cavs. And they overcame that, and they landed the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they got a really favorable matchup against the team that they are fully equipped to beat in this 7-game series.
Yeah, there was a lot of, I saw this, and, you know, I understand that social media isn't real, clearly, but there was a lot of consternation at the end of, although some people I think it is, a lot of consternation at the end of last week about the way that the Cavs played a week ago Sunday, and, you know, mm-hmm. should they have tried to chase the 2 or the 3? Meantime, I look at this, and I think, Orlando, I take that. That seems pretty advantageous to me. What did you make of the approach at the end, and as you mentioned, a favorable matchup with the Magic?
I just didn't think they saw any reason to go all out because so many of the other circumstances were outside of their control. And I don't think they wanted to play that kind of game as if it was all that meaningful and risk what could have happened. Yeah. You know, if you have Max Strus out there in the fourth quarter, who knows if he could get an injury, right? If you play your regulars 35 to 40 minutes, you open yourself up to a level of risk that you probably don't want to take and you weren't really in position to have to take. It's not like they were trying to avoid the play-in tournament and they needed to win that game. They had solidified their playoff spot. They knew they had home court advantage. Those were two things that mattered to them greatly. And I think they were, honestly, Bo, I think they were a little bit spooked when Craig Porter Jr. went out with an ankle injury after playing 9 minutes in the game, and they were like, oh my God, if that happened to Max Strus, oh my God, if that happened to Evan Mobley, if that happened to any of those guys that were suited up for that game, it would have been something that prevented them from winning a first-round playoff series against whoever it was that they were going to match up with. And I just don't think they saw enough gain for them to approach the regular season finale that kind of way. So I don't know, honestly, like I don't know that there was so much avoiding a certain team, manipulating matchups, tanking the end of game. They went into game 82 with a specific plan that the majority of their regulars were just not going to play in the fourth quarter. And they were going to give opportunities to guys who had not gotten minutes throughout the course of the year, were sitting at the end of the bench throughout the course of the year, and clearly those guys were not good enough for the Cavs to close out a win that day.
All right, big picture now, and it was incredible to see playoff basketball back and you know, trying to win a series without LeBron for the first time since when? A playoff series? When's the last time they won a playoff series without LeBron?
Is that like Mark Rice?
I mean, is it that long?
25 years, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. So, but now you get Orlando, and I think my feeling from the 30,000 feet is, okay, like, take care of your business here. You should. You're the more experienced team. And then you got Boston, who's going to be out there waiting. They're the one Goliath, right, in the East. Everyone else is banged up. It's really Boston. From J.B. Bickerstaff's perspective, what's the minimum requirement here this postseason?
Got to win a first-round playoff series.
Yeah.
And it might not even be enough if we're being perfectly honest. Because there's another layer to whole what's going to happen with the Cavs in the future conversation, and it's what does Donovan Mitchell believe when it comes to this organization's chances of competing for a championship? Like, how willing is he to sign a long-term contract extension this offseason? But you start with the baseline of got to win a first-round playoff series, got to show that you're not going to be outcoached by a guy the way that he was last year in the playoffs by Tom Thibodeau. Because everything about this season, Bo, for this team, was about taking the next step as an organization. And for them, given the way everything went last year and that non-competitive flameout against the Knicks, the next step for them was get out of the first round. Learn from your mistakes in the playoffs. Be more experienced. Show that you are a different coach. Show that you are a different player. And win a first-round playoff series. If that doesn't happen, if the Cavs have a similar result as last year against the Knicks, there are going to be sweeping organizational changes. You can count on that.
Oh, my God. Don't show up for work, right? Like, that's just it. Like, it's one of those fire you on the tarmac things if they lose to this Magic team. I'll get you out of here on this one. Just big picture me on the East. Do I have that read right? Boston and then a gap?
Without a doubt. Yeah. It's played itself out just like that in the regular season. And, you know, the team that was probably going to be most formidable was Philadelphia. If Joel Embiid was going to play like the MVP that he was last year, if he was going to be the guy that was a dominant force the way that he was at the beginning of the season, he isn't that guy right now. He's less than 100%. I don't know how you quantify how he looks out there, but he's not moving the same kind of way. He can't be the same dominant force. So I do think Boston has separated themselves from everybody in the Eastern Conference. And I think Boston's greatest challenge in a seven-game series is Boston. Are they going to do the right things? Are they going to take it seriously? All that kind of stuff.
That's well put out of you, buddy. We always win when you're on. We thank you. Great deal for your time, pal.
You got it. Anytime, Bo.
All right. That's our great friend Chris Fedor. Covers the NBA and the Cavs at Cleveland.com. Cavs, are they tonight? Is it tonight against
Orlando? Tonight at 7.
Okay. NBA. So they get the NBA TV slot. So they're going to be relegated to the 1 o'clock Saturday NBA TV slots because of Orlando, right?
That's right. And then they're in Disney on Thursday.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. Yeah, they were awfully impressive. That place was humming at the start of that game. And I thought it was really cool how ESPN kind of let it breathe and let just kind of the noise.
That was impressed with ESPN's NBA crew for letting 2 minutes just happen. I mean, you had back-to-back threes to start for the Cavaliers, but just let the emotion and the energy of the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse just make it. It was a much more entertaining product, I thought, because, you know, often when you have three-person booths, it's just someone talking over another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was good. It was very, very good. All right, coming up next, we'll get into the Akpara story. How did it happen? And now as you look at where that roster stands right now, is this a net positive? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop & Friends are here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Remember that first time you failed to perform in the bedroom? Probably just laughed it off. No big deal. Then it happened a second time, a third, or more. Now you know it's a problem. And you probably know that erectile dysfunction is a relationship destroyer. It can contribute to depression, distancing, conflicts, even breakups, divorce. What's so disturbing about this is most men who suffer from ED can be successfully treated, but a lot of guys don't seek treatment when they should. And that's where my guys at Tri-State Men's Health come in. Give them a call today. Their treatments work while the pills and herbals fail. They have treatment success rates well over 90%. So do yourself a favor. Schedule a consult with Tri-State Men's Health here in town today. Your initial visit, $99, includes medical consult, licensed medical provider, a T and PSA test, and if medically advised, a test dose. Now, if that test dose doesn't work, that office visit's going to be free. So it's a no-lose win-win for you. Give them a call today. Get your sex life back on track, 800-900-9654, or visit tristatemenshealth.com for more. Talked about this briefly earlier. I thought Chase Brown had a great kind of summary of what is going on the Buckeye basketball team from a roster standpoint in the Skull Session this morning at 11 Warriors. So I'll just put this to you. I mentioned this earlier, Felix Akpara in the portal. It happened on Sunday. I understand it. I assume when they added Aaron Bradshaw, there was dialogue between Akpara and Bradshaw. And we won't really know until you hear from Diebler how that all transpired, and I don't know if you'll ever get the real truth on it, but my assumption was that there was dialogue, and the point was the two would be playing together with two bigs, all the while acknowledging that having two out of the five guys on the floor who can't shoot threes is a bit of a problem from a spacing standpoint. So Akpar goes into the portal. Here are the additions. Michi, Aaron Bradshaw, and then Micah Parrish, three-star from San Diego State, who committed on Saturday. Here are the subtractions. Roddy Gale, Felix Akpara, Scotty Middleton, Zed Key, Bowen Hardman. Now, from a star perspective, Michi's a four, Bradshaw's a five, Parrish is a three. From a subtraction standpoint, Roddy's a four, Akpara's a four, Middleton's a four, Zed's a three, Hardman's a three.
Not to mention that you positive? Lost Dale Bonner and Jameson Battle, though, too, to lack of eligibility.
Yeah.
I think it can be if the guys hit, if those stars ring true, you know, having more five stars on there. There's a few too many four stars, though, in there for me. And the problem is I don't think Parrish is giving you any sort of replacement for what you're losing. But the top two are good guys that you wanted. Those are real guys on your list that you wanted. I think probably they did have it in mind with keeping Akpar, because the thing we've heard from Jake Diebler, and we saw it at the end of the year, is he wants to go deeper into the bench. He wants the guys to be moving and keep going and keep pushing. And that's tough for bigger guys, you know, that just in general, yeah, being in shape with a bigger body is harder to keep running up and down that court. And now you don't really have that true backup guy, which everyone was going to be the starter, whoever would be the other one out, and maybe they could spell each other at times. Now you don't have that, at least not currently on the roster. They still have two roster spots to fill up after picking up Parrish and losing Akpara over the weekend. And it's still the three-point shooting that you're worried about. But now you felt like, oh, front court's settled. This is going to be one of the best front courts in the Big Ten, if not the country. And now you're a little bit more unsure about that, of what's going to happen when Bradshaw needs a breath.
Well, he needs size.
So this is reckless speculation. But you sure you can't call Zed Key and say, what would it take?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess theoretically they could get Akpara back. I don't know how this works. I mean, none of us really know what's happening behind closed doors when it comes to the portal and NIL and how those conversations are taking place. I mean, this is why I'm not suggesting this is it at all, but this is just a hypothetical situation. And let's just take Bradshaw and Akpara as the example. Let's say you're Akpara and you have an NIL deal, and all of a sudden Bradshaw comes in and he's got a bigger NIL deal. And you're like, well, I want that. Well, we don't have that for you because we gave it to him. You were satisfied here.
And so you,
and then he's like, well, but not anymore, because I still got 8 days to be in here and see what else I can get on the market. Now, I'm not saying that happened, but this is the world that the administrators in college athletics have allowed to now exist, where there is true free agency without any sort of obligations from a contract standpoint. There's nothing holding anybody anywhere. So it could be something that simple. It could be playing time. Who the hell knows? You're not going to know until you hear from Akpara. You're not going to know until you hear from Jake Diebler how this all went about. But you start looking. This morning, I was just looking at the portal, and they were like, you know, I had them go to 24/7. They have the portal tracker, you know, yeah, and they rank the guys, like who's ranked where and where they're going. And you just think to yourself, I was thinking about Calipari when he said, I talked to the team, we don't have a team. And I was thinking about like Mark Pope at Kentucky, and I was thinking about this staff, obviously, and at least there's a handful of guys on this roster. But in many instances, you may have a situation that this portal closes, what's the 30th?
To enter it closes. Yeah.
Enters it. You have to, by then, to enter it.
At least that's football one. I don't know if the basketball.
You don't want to get trapped in that portal.
No. Well, the what I'm wondering is if like rosters will be filled this summer.
Because always exit.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So like, will this be something where this is now college basketball, where you have six or seven kids committed to a scholarship at the start of the summer, and you got to get four or five guys to come in?
Well, you talked about if like the NIL stuff, and maybe Akpar is saying, hey, well, if Bradshaw's offered that, why aren't I being matched for it to play the, you know, essentially the same position for you? And so then the players are using their leverage, and we've seen that. And I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody talking about the idea that basketball is actually kind of ahead of the trends in football. So we're seeing it even more, but basketball players started it first and did it. A ton of them did it this year, where they entered the NBA draft and the portal, keep their options open. And then I think also it is not just like the idea that it's always there that you could enter the portal, but our basketball players jumping into the portal as just like pulling out that leverage for them. Because, yeah, could Akpara come back and still be okay with Ohio State, but maybe gets a better NIL deal out of it? I could see that as totally possible, because I believe anything now, because I didn't think he was about to enter the portal until all of a sudden he did on Sunday.
The basketball portal reportedly closes on May 1st, so that's next Wednesday.
Okay, so it's longer than the football one.
Well, this is
the football one's just a couple. This is their first portal. This is their primary portal.
Mm-hmm. The one, remember, it opened right at, like, between the conference tournaments and the tournament. And it was like, that doesn't really work.
Fantastic timing on that, to have that open when all of that's going on. So I think what you're going to get used to on the college basketball side of things is you're going to have a portal open and close. Guys will stay in it without homes, and then there will be roster filling out. I feel good about the base guys that are on this roster, the six or seven guys who are here, whatever that number ends up being. I would have liked to see Akpara stay. I would have liked to see Middleton stay. I think if you're trying to go win a Big Ten, make a run in March, those are the things that you got to have.
It's kind of like the college basketball equivalent of the veteran free agent. He just says, I'm not going to sign until after training camp. I don't feel like going through all of it.
I think that's it exactly. That's kind of the mentality of it. Michigan, Notre Dame had their spring games yesterday. Our impressions of those coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common Man has spent the past 18 years telling you how much he hates people. And yes, that probably means you too. Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan. Not interested in Iowa football? Too bad. Shops will tell you about it anyway. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Monday. This happened on Friday afternoon, relatively late. College football is going to have some new rules in 2024. I always felt like the most significant thing that happened coming out of Connor Stallions and then a Michigan winning the national championship and beating Ohio State for the third straight time was that Ohio State was like, okay, it's enough. And Gene said that. I went berserk with football, right? Like, whatever you need. Go get your coordinators, pay Chip, NIL, let's lock it in, let's get everybody we need, let's spend a lot of money, let's go win a national championship, and those will be the expectations next year, expectations Ryan Day is not shying away from. Anytime he has a chance to talk, he talks about a 16 or 17 game season next season. So if that is the most significant thing of Connor Stallions and Michigan winning, this might be the second. So I don't know what the hell took so long, but now there's going to be in-helmet communications for the quarterback. So the idea that this technology has been around, can you get the MIT kids on this? When did the NFL start having communications in the helmet with the quarterback? I feel like it's been at least 20 years that the NFL's had it. I mean, you go back all the, I remember
the NFL approved the use of headsets for all NFL teams in 1994. It's been 30 years.
30 years.
NFL rules state that all helmets equipped with headsets must have a visible green dot on the back. Yeah, we know that.
30 years. So the NFL has had radios in its helmet for 30 years. Now, you could say in 1994, and this goes back to just archaic NCAA nonsense, when you try to rule Ohio State football the same way you try to rule Mount Union football is, and by the way, Mount Union did make sure they'd have communications in their helmets. They win a lot. But the idea that, like, not everybody can have communication, so nobody can have it. Just nonsense. Like, Power 5, and honestly, everybody in Division 1 should have had communication in the helmet for the last 20 years.
Not everybody can have 100,000 people in their stands. That shouldn't stop the people who have seats to fill it up.
That was always the pushback, though, was, well, not everybody can have it. Okay, fine. So now, what this means is all of those absurd giant posters with images of Taylor Swift and all of that stuff that signal things, that's gone. That's all gone. The three quarterback Monty, gone. That's done. Now coordinator will speak to quarterback directly. Quarterback will call plays. There will be sign stealing is no more. No more. And I do think Stallions and Michigan were the catalyst for this. I think it's enough. That was it. It's like, wow, this is incredible what they've done. We're almost impressed. It's kind of like the wheel of cheese in Anchorman. I can't even be mad. I'm almost impressed at how well that worked for them. And they got away with it. They won a national title. But that's it. And I do think it was the catalyst to it.
Well, it does sometimes feel like the thing that was holding it back were the coaches like Brent Venables and stuff at Clemson who were really good at sign stealing in game. And that was just kind of the unwritten rule that, hey, yeah, it stinks, but it's part of it. People are going to be able to decipher it after seeing this stuff. And so there were coaches who wanted the signs to still be there because they were good at stealing it live in game. And people mostly went along with it. But as he went all the way it got to its like full conclusion with Connor Stallions, and it's just like, okay, well, we can't have that. Let's just do with what the technology that's available to us that just gets rid of all of it.
Yeah, I think more to your point, if you look at some of the top coaches, the defensive guys like Kirby Smart and Nick Saban didn't raise any stink about it at all. And so it's like, well, if those guys, if and Ryan Day really never did, like even during the Connor Stallions thing, wasn't quick to the trigger in terms of like giving his opinion on the thing. And so nobody,
I think he was seething behind the scenes,
sure, but that doesn't get anything done. You know, you need to bring it to the forefront. It was, you know, with other issues in college sports, you couldn't just let it eat you up behind the scenes. Like you had to be out and up, you know, up front and out about it.
So you will have a green dot quarterback and you'll have a green dot defender. So it'll be just like the NFL, which is how it should have been for the last two decades, quite honestly.
For some reason, too, the rule of only two green dots at a time, like, extends to practice. Because they've talked about how they, like, switch out, like, days for the quarterbacks throughout spring. And I'm not sure. I don't know if that's, like, just, like, a technology standpoint or why it has to be that way. But, like, a different quarterback was the only one who could wear the green dot on any given day, I read during spring.
You're telling me, like, but was that just to test it?
It might have just been because it was a test thing, but either way, that's what it was. You didn't have all four or five quarterbacks with a green dot out there during this season or this spring practice.
It'd be pretty stupid. Like if you went into next season and every quarterback should have a green dot.
Yeah, that would be too much for in-game.
Yeah, you have to have every quarterback's got to have one. You can't have a situation where somebody gets, oh my God, his helmet doesn't have one. Like that would have to be. So they have the defender as well. They also, this is pretty interesting. Finally, at long last, a two-minute warning in college football. So you're going to get one of those. That's another new rule change that will happen next season. You're going to have a two-minute warning. Now, the one thing I saw about this was it won't necessarily mean a commercial break.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, the NCAA is in charge of that. You think Fox and ESPN aren't going to take their opportunities to have a break?
Would you like
break?
Some picture-in-picture?
There you go.
It's not a break. That's what, you can still see the coaches on the sideline.
Yeah. That's exactly what it'll be. So you're going to get you get a 2-minute warning. I'm for this. I just think you need to have universal rules. It's ridiculous. I feel the same way about, you know, men's college basketball playing halves instead of quarters. Just kind of nonsense. And then I didn't know this was the case, that there were no tablets on the sidelines. I guess I never think about it. I just assume that they did.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to have tablets on the sidelines as well. So, you know, these are all wins. The in-helmet thing, it took way too long to make that happen, for sure.
With a guy like Chip Kelly running the offense, I wonder what that could look like. Like, how much tempo is he going to try? He's not quite the tempo he was at Oregon when he was at UCLA, but it's still there in his game. And if the communication is easier to call those plays, what's that going to look like? But I guess the quarterback still has a signal to play once he gets it.
Well, think about this. What was the number I think it was a number one beef Ryan Day had last season. Anytime he would do an in-game interview or post-game interview, his number one beef was always the amount of plays.
Yeah.
Or not getting enough plays. It was he would talk about it in an in-game. He would talk about it post-game, not enough plays. So this, if he wants to play tempo, then by God, this is the roster to play tempo with. He's got a ton of dudes. Now you can go a direct communication to quarterback. They can play as much tempo as they want. Quarterback will have to have hand signals, obviously, to communicate it to the rest of the offense. That will be the one thing about this, as opposed to the entire team looking over to get the play. It's only to the quarterback. So the quarterback will have to have hand signals.
Yeah, he still has to somehow get it to the guys.
He's got to communicate it. So he's going to have to communicate it to the team. So that will be a change.
You're right about the play thing, but it just made me think, like, it's funny how they're kind of incongruent that he was so mad about losing plays last year, and then this year is stressing so much how long the season would be and how much depth they need. And it's like, well, do you want to run more plays or less plays?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely the way it's going to go. It's a positive, though. It's a very, very big win and a very, very big positive, I think, for the sport, that it's going to have a very similar rule system. So good job out of finally getting that done about, I don't know, at least two decades too late. How much of the Michigan spring game, if at all, did you guys take in? I was at the lacrosse, so I did not see it.
I actually recorded it and came home early afternoon, and then I watched about the first half. I left it on, but I didn't pay attention to the second half.
What
first drive?
Yeah. What did you think of? Did Fox do anything different with presentation than what they did at ours?
I mean, I don't know if it was their choice on presentation, but Sharon Moore did not talk, and Michigan coaches in general did not talk nearly as much as we saw a week ago for Ohio State.
Yeah, same crew on it, though? Was it Urban?
Basically, it was Jake Butt and Benetti, and then on the field was Jenny Taft, Joel Klatt, and Charles Woodson was on the field. Instead of up in the booth, they put Woodson on the field. So three on the field, two in the booth.
Okay. All right, so that's the way that went. Now, I did see, I read the stuff on the breakdown. I watched some of the highlights of it. The thing that was jarring to me was how many empty seats, and I'm guessing it was not a great day up there weather-wise, but there was a ton of empties. And I do think that, I think Michigan's kind of like, we're good. I think that's their attitude this year. Like, we good. We're won it. Harbaugh, on the day of the spring game, he gets his 15-0 tattoo. Like, he's prancing around in his RV in Southern California. I just think that their attitude is kind of like, we've done it. We're good for another 25 years. We'll see you down the road. It feels like that's kind of the attitude I get from that program.
No, and I felt like Ohio State, and I think it goes to the idea of always be Cruton, but Ohio State was like a much more friendly network partner with Fox for it, and Michigan didn't really seem interested in that. And I'm like, well, you guys are the second spring game ever on national television. That is a tremendous opportunity to have your brand out there and have people notice. And, you know, I don't know who's watching, but I bet recruits watch spring games of teams that have shown interest in them, and they want to check it out. And it just didn't have quite that same feel. And then they were doing running clock, like basically the entire game. It stopped a few times. I wasn't exactly sure what the rules were, but it's clearly like running clock after incomplete pass type stuff. And that was from the beginning of the game. And then they were running the ball a lot. And I don't know if that was a response to the weather, but it was sort of like how we talk about that in preseason NFL. Like, what's the point of running the ball in your spring game like the whole time? That's not really what you're trying to work on. You know that as long as your offensive line is pretty settled and you feel good about it, you know that you should be able to run the ball. But they were just running up and down the field. Alex Orji scored a touchdown on the first drive on a quarterback run, but it was one of those ones where it's like, well, they kind of let him go because defenders don't know what to do in spring games when the quarterback takes off.
They were kind of loose with the quarterback. Like, is he down? Went like on contact.
Yeah,
they were just like, just let it go. I mean, for Michigan, Bo, to your point, like this is gravy for them because they're going to have Texas, SC, and Washington plus Ohio State on the schedule this year. They'll show up. They might be competitive. They could even be good. But whatever happens, as long as they sniff the college football playoff, and there's no reason to think that they won't, especially with the defensive starters that they return this year. This is just gravy for them.
They were also live tackling.
I think it's Cat ate the canary. I think it's Cat ate the canary for them.
They were live tackling full throughout that game too, except for the quarterbacks. Like, even Donovan Edwards was being taken to the ground on the first drive of the game.
Yeah, I think for them it's we've done it. We're good. And look, you got to beat them. So I will never undersell Michigan again. Like, their defense is what it is. You've lost three in a row. You've been out physical. You've been beaten every way you can be beaten the last 3 years. But we just look at what the portal, what they're doing in recruiting, the transition to Harbaugh, all of it from Harbaugh to Moore. There just isn't, it doesn't to me feel, and I understand it. Why would there be a sense of urgency? They've done it. They've done everything. So I think that they will have a lot of patience and more in trying to build this, at least for a little while, a couple years at least, before anything, provided it goes off the tracks. But the stuff that I read Austin Peay stuff and looked at some of the melts from it, and I just saw the lack of people that were there, and it was just like, dude, we got our flowers. We're good. And that's kind of the feeling I get from that program.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, that was kind of the way even like the broadcast was situated, like from the Fox people, because there were tons of graphics of look at it, all the new guys on the coaching staff. There was one graphic that came up. They only have one returning starter on the offensive side of the ball, kind of two if you count Donovan Edwards, but obviously Corum in front of him there. But yeah, that was like kind of the theme of it is like, this is not the team from last year anymore.
No, not. So while there is no pressure in Ann Arbor, I think there's a great deal of pressure if you just go a little bit west of Ann Arbor. We will get into that, and a Buckeye legend making his presence felt in South Bend. In addition to that, a famous name has himself a day, and no significant transfers yet for Ohio State. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan. Ohio sports destined. Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
saw Jim Tressel in South Bend over the weekend for the Notre Dame spring game, reading some of the dialogue around the Irish. And I think we had this right. We mentioned this last week when we were talking about coaches who need to win a national championship. Marcus Freeman doesn't need to win a national championship, but he needs to make the playoff. And it's their most talented defense that they've had in a very, very long time. They've got Riley Leonard at quarterback. He didn't participate in the spring game. He's nursing some injuries, but he'll be there in the fall. And I think the feeling is, you read everything you read about around that program, is like, not only do they need to win, that make the playoff, but like, they better host a playoff game in South Bend. That's kind of the attitude that you get coming out of that program. And I think it is real. Marcus is going into year three. It's worked to this point, but at the same time, more is expected now from them. And you can just tell with what you hear from the people who write about the program and what you hear from the people who comment about the program that there is a sense of urgency going into year three for Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, and reading the coverage of the spring game, it sounds like that sense of urgency was, let's get the offense right, because that's kind of what's been ailing Notre Dame over the last few years since Marcus Freeman has taken over. And you mentioned the defense. They're basically returning everybody from that side of the ball from a starter standpoint and production standpoint. So they look really good on that side of the ball. And from the spring game, they're going up against their own guys. I didn't watch it live, but the correspondence from it is that they not only have better wide receiver acumen, but more of them. So there's even depth there as well. And then the assumption, you could see it from the play calling that they did on Saturday, and then with Riley Leonard, assuming his health and his ankle is good after he had that procedure earlier in March, is that they're going to run the quarterback a little bit more. So I think that's their goal right now. On the outside looking in, it appears that they were like, we have to revamp the offense because it's not good enough. And we've seen that. It was a little vanilla the last 2 years that Ohio State played him.
Speaking of Ohio State, Roddy Gale just announced his commitment to Michigan.
Come again?
From John Rothstein, Ohio State transfer Roddy Gale has announced a commitment to Michigan per his Instagram page.
It's not ideal.
That's a choice. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with the swap of Michi for Roddy. I like Michi's game a little bit more for Roddy's, but I also didn't anticipate him ending up at Michigan.
Could end up at South Carolina, then we wouldn't have to worry about him.
Yeah. That's a choice, man. I mean, that does feel like a calculated choice. Like, it's one thing to, but I don't know if kids think of it that way. I don't know if they think of it that way.
Are they moving kids, so much that they don't even have that in their head of like, I'm going to my rival. It's just, oh, there's a portal opportunity.
I used to call it in the NBA when there was all that free agency 15 years ago with LeBron and all those guys, like the AAUification of the NBA, where it was like, hey, let's just get a bunch of good guys together and we're all going to play together. But now I wonder if this is the AAUification of college basketball, where it doesn't, you know, what difference does it make? Did Michigan give him the best offer and he took it? Maybe it's that simple.
Because of how, too, like with the portal and everything, how like transient the player movement has become. Do players even feel that connection to somewhere that they don't graduate from? Like, does it just get sold into them just so differently, or do they never even really buy into it the same way at all? That like, oh, this is my university, that they are a basketball player and they happen to play for whichever school works out for them at the time. I think that's more of the factor. Now, I was reading, somebody had that, you know, I'm reading a lot of transfer portal stuff, and it was somebody talking about the idea that the players don't come in and really cultivate the care of those schools in the same way. And I don't think that's the players' fault. I think that's the way the game has just evolved over time. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I wonder with all these like transfers, like, where do guys go back for, you know, in a football sense, like a spring game, you know? Is it just where they finish their careers, or where they have their best years? How do they even identify that stuff anymore?
I
don't know.
That's a good question. I think in some instances with the guys who have been around here, it's been, because didn't Jameson Williams come back for a spring game here? And Burrow has.
Yeah.
Right? Even after they'd gone elsewhere?
And then obviously Burrow would be somebody who would go to an LSU spring game if his... Yeah, like, where's an NFL player going to go in this generation of player during, like, his bye week? You know, a lot of guys like to go back if there's a big game on campus.
Yeah.
But how do you decide that? Or what if two teams that you identify with both have a big game on campus? Then you have to make a choice, and people call you out for it?
For the longest time in that search, the feeling, the thing that you kept hearing was that it would be Dusty May. that was the guy that Ross Bjork had identified, that he was the guy who was kind of leading that search. And then Jake started stacking some wins, and we certainly know about, you know, the recruiting that needs to happen in the state of Ohio over the next 3 to 4 years. But the one thing we said once May went to Michigan was, you are going to get an apples for apples comparison about
and
what was the right choice.
Today's news kind of bolsters that point.
Yeah, and I don't know that, again, I like Michi's game better than I like Roddy's game. Okay? So I'm cool with the trade. I just didn't expect Roddy to end up at Michigan.
It's weird seeing him in it, like, because it's, and obviously you can put whichever player you'd like in whichever uniform you would like with Photoshop, but him actually wearing a Michigan jersey in the picture that he posted with Michigan colored sunglasses, weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a different one for sure. Speaking of the portal, on the football side of things, Dallin Hayden over the weekend to Colorado. He visited Colorado, and no other major transfers in the portal to this point for Ohio State. So the portal closes on the 1st. As of right now, all the quarterbacks are still in. Everybody else has remained steadfast. So far, it looks like I missed the ball on the Alabama aggressiveness. I did see they landed the number one kicker in the portal, but they have been a little bit calmer than I thought that they would be. I thought that they'd be all in, and there hasn't been a flood of guys coming in. I do think the SEC to SEC rule hurts them a little bit, because I think guys they would have had an interest in, they're not, because of the fact that you have to sit out a full year.
You still got a week.
You do.
Like, so there's still time for this, and who's not to say that Alabama, as soon as that thing became legal, then, or I guess when it officially opened again, didn't make a bunch of inroads, and they're all just kind of waiting. Because I think for, you know, Hayden's a great example of this. He's going on a free agent tour. You know, yes. He's going to make a visit to Colorado. He might make a visit to Auburn. He might make a visit to Texas A&M, was one of the Texas schools. It's like, go and be a free agent. See, you can offer you not only the best NIL package, but the best route to the NFL.
I was wondering too, but it doesn't really feel like, I mean, this is only partly into Monday, but we had all day Sunday, that maybe we'd see a little bit more of a windfall, because you had the A&Ms and the Colorados that are doing a ton in the portal, really, it feels like, no matter what. But I thought, well, is everybody just waiting until all the spring games are open so they can see where things are falling across the country, not just at their school, like at Ohio State? Yeah, obviously our spring game was done, but were they waiting for those other Big Ten schools to finish? Because Michigan was this weekend, Iowa was this weekend, those are just two off the top of my head that I know were this weekend. So maybe in the next coming days we'll see a little bit more action, but still, so far, it has not taken off the way I kind of expected it to once all the games were settled.
No, I'm just looking even on 24/7 in terms of the latest guys in. Two Louisville guys today, another guy from Colorado, another corner. Coach Prime better get to work. He's got to get to work putting that roster together. I talked to my team. What team? They got a lot of work to do. Now, remember, you have all summer, too, so it's not that pressing, but man.
Wonder if word is out too that if you miss spring transferring in, unless you're a dude, is actually a pretty hard task for you to find your way into playing time on a new team. So you might just be better off staying somewhere.
Yeah, that could be the realities of it. But yeah, that just to sum up, you're just joining us, Roddy Gale, former Buckeye guard, transferring to Michigan next year, and I'm not sure anyone saw that coming. Austin Ward joins us coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. More life, more energy.
And he joins on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Good buddy Austin Ward right here at the Fan, dotting the I's as well. I know that football is certainly your area of primary expertise, my friend, but we just had this news of the Roddy Gale transfer to Michigan. And I'm curious, we were thinking about this, like, how are guys who transfer out received back? Like, if a guy transfers out and plays somewhere else for a year, then is he welcome back for like spring game and that type of stuff on the football side of things?
Not usually, no. These things are, you know, it's hard to paint it in a definitive one way or another. I mean, Sam Wiggles left to Ohio, and he came back and participated in Pro Day. So I guess I can't say it is black white, one decision applies to every single person that leaves. Some of the situations that they face, why they left, how they handled it, you would take that on a little bit of a case by case basis. But and a lot of this now, Bo, we're feeling it out in a new world where you can't blame, you know, Dallin Hayden for wanting to leave, or, you know, if the situation just changed for Felix Akpara after he feel like he was going to stay at Ohio State for basketball to hop over on that side. So all these things are new, and it's going to keep being more difficult to answer it in one clear and concise way until they actually put in more rules that will clarify all this. Gene Smith talked about that on Thursday. That was a great chat. If anybody hasn't caught up on some of his thoughts there with he and Doug LaMaurice on Thursday, like, it's not going to come from the NCAA. Everybody's aware of that. And the longer that this takes for, like, federal oversight, the more you're going to get into these weird, uncomfortable situations. So I don't think that there's a blueprint or a manual for how basketball or football will handle them. Like, some of it will just depend on, you know, the way that exit is handled, and maybe some explanations as to how they wound up in that case, in that situation in the first place.
It, so far, at least, the spring transfer window has been relatively quiet. You mentioned Hayden. Mm-hmm. We've known about that for a couple of weeks. And not just quiet here, but relatively quiet around the country of the programs that are significant programs of consequence. Do you anticipate that staying that way here over the last 8 days?
It probably won't stay as quiet as it was, but I think there was so much conversation last Tuesday. This is going to be the wildest period yet in the transfer portal. That really has not been the case, and I'm talking nationally. I think we thought the number, you and I talked last week on Monday, Bo, it could be, you know, 6 or 7. You could understand why, and that has not been the case. Now, part of that was initially when the portal opened. Ohio State was still going through last Tuesday and Wednesday individual meetings with players and position coaches. Thursday, there was another meeting where everybody had to be involved and to meet with Mickey Marotti and get some instructions for, you know, they have a chance to go home for a couple of weeks, people who have online classes, which is most of Ohio State's roster, you know, so to get some instructions for that, for training, if you were leaving. And so Ohio State was still working through, like, post-spring exit interviews, and you can understand, like, how important that would be for someone to make their decision. So you've got another 8-9 days here for guys to have their DMs flooded with people making offers and to think about where they really fit in. But it has not been as wild specific to Ohio State, but also across college football, as many were expecting it to be. And I do think that there's a recognition of how difficult it is to go through an entire spring camp with a program, learn all the offense or defense, a playbook, get ingrained with teammates, and then try and start over in the summer with just August to settle in and maybe potentially play somewhere else in the fall. That's a daunting proposition, and I think a lot of these guys recognize that the opportunities to make that kind of impact are going to be pretty few and far between.
That's the thing that I think we're all maybe just – we maybe didn't give it the proper credit of just how hard it would be to try to play somewhere right away transferring now. Like, it's one thing you know, and there will be guys who aren't looking to play. And, you know, certainly we talk about that with some of the quarterbacks on our depth chart. But the reality is like coming in and trying to like be a dude right away without having spring football is really, really tough. From a out there looking standpoint, what are you hearing the Buckeyes, if anything, are looking for in the portal? We always talk about offensive line. Are they poaching around those waters, trolling around in those waters?
It doesn't look at this point, Bo, like there's going to be a surefire, no doubt, and I have to say it's like it has to be an NFL ready tackle being in the portal. Like, and I think when you have, we've had this discussion about Josh Breyer and guard and moving back and forth, you have to be like very sure that there's an absolute upgrade out there in the portal, because he does have a year of experience now plus another spring, another winter. He was by the way, an all Big Ten first team selection at tackle last year. So finding something that is definitely going to be an upgrade on that is a challenge. I think some of the evaluation here with Breyer, like he gave up very few pressures over the course of last season. The reason that I think we look back and wonder, is there a higher ceiling for Ohio State at tackle than Josh Freier is because every time he did give up a pressure, it seemed to go directly into a sack. And that's not what you want. But he was much better over the course of the year than I think he gets credit for. So if there was somebody, I mean, if Caden Proctor had been interested in Ohio State, would they have gone down that road? I think they probably would have been. They're not doing something to protect anyone's feelings. They've been much more aggressive with the people that they've reached out to and the activity that they've undergone in the portal than they have in years past. That's an absolute unequivocal fact. So, but you don't just do it and hope that, oh, well, this competition could shake out differently in August. I don't think that would be the way Ohio State's approaching this. And you think about the spring window and what transpired last year. Josh Simmons represented about what was the best of what was out there, and that that took some time to get him up to speed. So I don't think we're in a world where proven national championship caliber starters are going to be entering in the portal in April. Now, I could definitely be wrong about that, but I don't think that's going to be happening. And outside of that, you know, maybe if there's a depth safety that wants to come in, a veteran who can understand the system, get up to speed quickly, you know, the numbers are a little bit light there compared to where Ohio State's wanted them in the past with Cedric Hawkins going in the transfer portal in this window, and Kai Stokes previously in the winter. So that could be somewhere where if something transpires, that may be somewhere you look. But even then, you've got someone like Inky Jones who had a great spring. You could put him on scholarship. The same thing at running back. We talked about maybe replacing Dallin Hayden. T.C. Caffey, along with those freshmen, they had very good springs as well. So I don't think that Ohio State, and maybe that's why we're not seeing a lot of movement so far with just those two guys going in. Like there's quite a lot of buy-in on this roster and in a very high level of confidence that you don't want to miss out on winning a national championship.
It does kind of feel that way. Last one for you, buddy. I'll get you out of here on this. I did see some rumors with Keen Holtz at Iowa, but you never know. It's message board stuff. It's hard to know what's real and what's not out there.
Sure.
But here we sit. It's April 22nd. No quarterbacks in. Do you anticipate that staying that way?
I can't really say that I feel a high level of confidence in that. I think that Ohio State wants desperately to keep Lincoln Keen Holtz. I can say that with a high level of confidence that they do not want to see him go out the door. And, you know, Iowa, Wisconsin, back channels, those are some of the things that I've heard going on there with him. Mm-hmm. Ohio State does, they know that he can play football at the Big Ten level. And evaluating him based on the Cotton Bowl and, like, the circumstances in the spring game last week, I think that's not what Ohio State sees in the larger body of work for Lincoln Keen Holtz and with his athleticism. And you don't want to ever say, well, I'll take out the interceptions. Like, but the other throws he's made throughout the five-ish practices that we saw throughout camp, Lincoln Keen Holtz showed progress as well. And he definitely looks like someone who can play at that level. So I don't know what will transpire in the next 8 days. There may be an increasing level of desperation for other programs that want a quarterback, but I've not got the sense in my dealings directly with Lincoln Keen Holtz that he is looking to ask, that he must be a starter in his, you know, second year on campus anywhere. I think he knows that there's work to be done. So I would hate to make a prediction for you. I know that that's bad radio, but
no.
It's such a complicated process. And I know that Ohio State is working hard to make sure that room stays together, whatever those guys need to be comfortable with that they're doing. But I can't vouch for what anybody else might do or if the Swarm feels a need to drop a much larger bag of cash and influence Lincoln Keen Holtz or anybody else on the Ohio State roster.
Nor would I ever expect you to, my friend. You don't know where a bag is going to come from. It's impossible in these times to predict much of anything, but I appreciate you playing along. Thanks for your time, pal.
All right. Talk to you next week, though.
All right. That's our good buddy, Austin Ward, right here at the Fan and dotting the I's on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Thing or not a thing up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on the Fan.
Death, taxes, and beating Michigan every damn year. This is your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Monday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
ESPN with this first one. 2 days after he became the youngest player ever to make the cut on the Corn Ferry Tour, Miles Russell notched another pretty cool achievement for a 15-year-old. He finished tied for 20th in the event. Russell, the reigning American Junior Golf Association Player of the Year, closed with a 5-under 66 on Sunday at the Lecombe Suncoast Classic in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, finishing 6 shots behind winner Tim Whiting. He became the youngest player since at least 1983 to finish in the top 25 in a Corn Ferry Tour or PGA Tour event. An amateur playing on a sponsor's exemption, Russell won't pocket any of the money for the finish, but he did qualify for next week's Corn Ferry event, the Veritex Bank Championship in Texas, as a result of finishing in the top 25. Thing or not a thing?
Jeez. Man, that's crazy. 15, and he's doing this. It's also kind of crazy. He can't pocket the money. Like,
well, why not? At first I was like, well, maybe that's an answer to that NIL question. It's like, well, no, he's in high school, so I don't. Those rules are different state to state already. But I feel like college amateurs should be allowed to accept it now.
I don't understand why a high school kid couldn't. You know what I mean?
Like, I guess it destroys your eligibility. You can't play for
school.
Yeah,
if you were to do it, like, say that, say Miles Russell's from Ohio, you would be ineligible for
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew that part about the OHSAA, but, like, he's probably not on the golf team anyway. What does he care? I assume that
he's
it's
15.
Like,
what else is he, I guess, just doing this?
So, my nephew is an elite, he's actually going to Duke on a tennis scholarship. He's a kid from Indiana. And he's ranked like in the top 10 in the United States in tennis, and he doesn't play for the high school team. So I don't know if golf's the same as tennis at that level.
What does he play like?
I don't know.
Just competitions?
Just tournaments. Youth tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he was in Toronto last weekend playing in some international tournament there. And he's still playing at Duke.
Well, and hell, if he keeps playing this well, he can just play on the Corn Ferry Tour. Just keep getting exemptions. Just keep finishing in the top 25 and make the next week.
Yeah. I'm blanking. There was a kid. Oh, man. There was a golf prodigy from Orlando in the 2000s that was he's next. He was really good, really quick, and then it flamed out just incredibly. And I'm blanking on the name of the kid. It'll come to me in a second.
It seems like you
worry about that part of it.
It seems historically that's the trend, because the other guys they mentioned who have like done things that are similar to this feat or the previous, one was like Tony Finau's brother, and I was like, well, I know who Tony Finau is, but I'm not really familiar with his brother. Another one was like a 2013. He was like the Asian amateur champion that came over for the Masters in 2013, but it's not a name that I'm familiar with in golf anymore.
It's Ty Tryon. That's the name. He turned pro in like 01 and flamed out pretty quickly. But he was one of those guys who was Ricky Barnes was too, but Tryon's the guy I was thinking of, where sometimes too much too soon. I hope that doesn't happen to this kid, but sometimes too much too soon can derail all of it.
Yeah, that 15 is not. It's a huge thing, right? To be able to do that at 15, yeah. To be as developed already at your game of golf. But I'm thinking back to when I was 15, I was getting my temps. You know?
Well, yeah. Okay. Think about just, Reese, to your point, like a 15-year-old. Think of like the length he's got to have off the tee
right. To
be able to hang.
You're already
with
that
men.
Developed to do it.
But from that point, I mean, think about what was most important to you at 15. Maybe he gets older and this just isn't what he wants to do anyways. That could also be part of the flame out part.
Trust me, I see that in youth sports all the time.
Right now, if you want to buy a new Caitlin Clark red and navy blue Indiana Fever 22, they won't ship until August. The WNBA site, which is run by Fanatics, says that's due to Nike's manufacturing times. Listings from Nike, which makes the jerseys, just say the product is coming soon. Within a day of being selected by the Fever in the 2024 draft last week, Clark's jersey became the top-earning jersey ever for a draft pick. But the jersey sales aren't just destroying WNBA numbers. According to New York Daily News, Clark sold more jerseys in a single day than the entire Dallas Cowboys roster last season. Thing or not a thing?
Any Cowboy fans out there buying jerseys?
That's wild. I saw Tim McGraw in one. Over the weekend, he had a Caitlin Clark jersey on. I think he was performing in Indy, so he had one. This is an abject failure on Nike's part. This didn't sneak up on you, dude.
Like, you should have had a million of these ready, and all you have to do is print 22 Clark. Like, back, they work with her. Iowa's a Nike school. She probably had an NIL deal with Nike before any of this even started. She signed with them. Have the 20, you know, Indiana's taking her number one. How are these not ready?
Yeah, the WNBA draft
abject failure
actually goes like right before the season. So the season's been over for a long time. We knew Indiana was going to have the number one pick like this entire college basketball season. And there was never really much movement off of, we think Indiana's going to take Caitlin Clark. So that would have been there. To wear my tinfoil hat for a second, I can't tell if Fanatics and Nike are working together to lower the standard to make their jobs easier, or if they're fighting against each other and pointing fingers because they want one or the other to like lose. Because I was thinking, this spawns from the baseball thing, how terrible the baseball uniforms are. And my theory is that Nike actually let Fanatics make them not so great so that Fanatics would lose like market share and Nike could jump up to be like the lead apparel. Yeah. Or maybe they're just both working together, and so then they can just take turns on blaming one or the other when they mess up, and then nobody can really be mad at it because Nike and Fanatics are the only place you can buy jerseys from.
So there was a time, it's interesting what Fanatics has done, because I'm thinking about when the boys were little, you know, I probably bought more stuff from them in terms of like for gifts than any place, whether it be jerseys or gear. Like, they're always been my go-to. So in the old days when the boys were, when NBC was like three, when this was like 9 years ago, and this is when I first started buying gear, they would run sales, it'd be like 20% off heading into Black Friday, like that type of stuff. But that's when they had competitors. Now that they've annihilated all the competitors, it's over. I mean, it's done. And so they're doing, everybody's doing that. They're doing like that basically live pricing. Like, everybody's doing this now. Like, if you go on Nike right now, certain pairs of Air Max are full price, and some are just randomly like $137.
They're surge pricing clothing.
It's surge pricing clothing. I'm telling you, Nike does it. Fanatics does it. They've squashed the competition, and so that's what they're doing.
So in that, at least August, before they start to ship, if you see Caitlin Clark jerseys at any of the WNBA games this year, because it'll be like almost the three quarters of the way through the regular season, if they're going to be worn, they're not officially licensed. So it's like those sites that you can buy jerseys from, that, you know, that probably overseas is where they're getting shipped from. It's like they're sitting there going, "Oh, we'll make a pretty good penny off of this."
It's the equivalent of your Bad Boy streams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't condone and cannot.
You don't. No.
Just aware of the existence of.
Only aware.
There's places you can get jerseys online. I wouldn't know anything about it.
And so this also, in regards to the Indiana Fever, they're going to be broadcasting all of their games locally in Indianapolis on their NBC affiliate out there and MeTV. So free Indiana Fever games if you live in the Indianapolis metro area next year.
That's great. Season. That's great. All right. We blitz the weekend coming up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
An encyclopedic knowledge of sports and other random things you may or may not care about.
I think I found my mentor.
Rockman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Monday edition of the program. Let's blitz the weekend, boys.
Bishop and Friends present the Weekend Sports Blitz.
All right, what'd you have this week, Reese?
Well, I had that the Cavs would win game one of their first round playoff series against the Magic. I also had that it wouldn't be a pretty one. Cleveland shot 26% from the 3-point line, Orlando 21%. Cavs were up 20 at one point, Orlando trimmed it to 9. And that was as close as the Magic got because they couldn't make shots, any of them. From anywhere.
Yeah, I believe I had that. Nola Gold, my rugby team, no good in the second halves. Can't get it going. 3 weeks in a row, I've watched their game, and 3 weeks in a row, they just let me down in the second half. So that is now a foregone conclusion that I have to deal with. They were 3-1 when I started watching. They are now 3-4. It was the first road win of the season. 42-27 was the final. It was close at halftime, but out of reach. The Miami Sharks, not the ones from any given Sunday. They're playing rugby. It was their first road win of the season against my Nola Gold.
All right. Where are you watching this? Is this online only?
Yeah, it's an app called the Rugby Network. And Major League, there are some, like the Better Rugby is like a pay subscription, but Major League Rugby is free to stream.
So the Better Rugby is like the Across the Pond stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then second of all, NOLA. So New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to go to a game. That's got to be your next trip, you and J-Lo. Like, you need to go to New Orleans. Which
New Orleans actually has been on our list, yeah.
Yeah, so you should go. It's a great food city. You guys would have a ball. Cool town. Again, remember my rule on that. No more than 2 nights, 3 at the most, and you got to get the hell out of there. But you need to. This has all got to line up, I think, for you. All right, what did I have? Michigan apathy. Just could sense it coming. When the stuff that I read on the spring game, the images I saw from their spring game, They're cat ate the canary, and they're going to act like, yeah, so what? Like, that's going to be their approach for the next couple of years. I don't think that the fire burns as hot in them, clearly, as it does down here. And we got to beat them, for sure. Everybody knows it, but it feels to me like they're going to be pretty apathetic the next couple of years towards their football program because, unfortunately, they did it. So that's the way it felt to me, just the coverage, the fan interaction, all of it. Pretty tepid response out of Michigan coming off the national title. What didn't you have, Reese?
I didn't have Felix Akpara transferring. I thought even with the addition of Aaron Bradshaw, like, you were going to be able to play two big men sometimes at once. You know, with Zed leaving, that was, you know, you knew at the end of last season that it was going to be more minutes for Akpara, and you didn't know what Zed Key's situation was going to be. He had participated in senior day festivities, but like, I thought it was Akpara's position even with Aaron Bradshaw coming in, and I damn sure didn't have Roddy Gale Jr. committing to Michigan.
No, I mean, that's where I was going. Felix Akpara transferring, and on top of that, Roddy Gale going to Michigan. Two things that I didn't see. The Roddy Gale one is even probably more out of left field, because at this point, any player entering the transfer portal, even if it surprises me, it's not like it really surprises me all that much. But yeah, I did think that Jake Diebler was building a roster where they would have, one, the two guys could spell each other because they're going to want to try to run that court a lot as the big men, and maybe, like Reeser said, play at the same time. But now no longer, and his block streak will end at 43 games, a school record here at Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, those both shocking. Both of those. Akpara jumping in, but maybe we should have read the tea leaves, but then Roddy going to Michigan. It's been a tough 48 hours for Jake, and just the way that all of that looks, it's not great. What I didn't have, the following exchange at a sixth grade lacrosse game on Sunday. There's no fabricating this. This is the exact quote. Penalty not called, whether it's the official's fault or not. Coach on the opposing team yelling at the official yelling, "You are a jackass. You, sir, are a jackass." To which point the head coach on the other team says, "You'll never work in this town again." Followed by, in the middle of the third quarter of the game, the referee walking over to the sideline, getting his backpack and leaving. Followed by an assistant coach by the opposing team now refereeing the rest of the game. I did not have that, how I was going to spend my Sunday afternoon. Player who impressed the most. Who do you got, Reese?
Josh Naylor's batting helmet. So I don't know if you've seen the video at this point, but he had a 2-run home run in the fifth inning of the Guardians 6-3 win over the A's Saturday. And as he was celebrating, right before he got to first base, he just whacks himself in the helmet with the baseball bat. And he spikes the bat on the ground. And I wondered, as I'm watching this, going, "No, sir, don't do that. Like, you're going to find yourself in concussion protocol." He was fine because he had 3 RBI on Sunday. But, yeah. Sir, like, let's not, you don't need to injure yourself. Like, I get you're fired up and all, but, like, ow.
Who was that? I think he played for the Texans in the league, and I think he's when he does, but he was like a fullback for West Virginia. And he came out and slammed the helmet into his forehead. Maybe I'm getting a mix up with Brian Cushing because he played for the Texans and was always bleeding from his face too.
Owen
Schmidt.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about that recall?
There we go. Good. Together we double teamed that one, but I wouldn't have gotten it without the Owen. Yeah. But yeah, just be careful, guys. Your equipment can hurt you. There was an assistant coach who was headbutting kids on the sideline for a team, like a college team recently, I think, who ended up splitting his forehead open.
Legendary defensive coordinator at Georgia named Irk Russell, who then went and coached at Georgia Southern. They won a bunch of 1AA national titles, and he would consistently headbutt players. And there, if you just Google it, Irk Russell, E-R-C-K Russell, you'll see images of blood trickling down his forehead. Just an old dude, just headbutting dudes.
Just guy being dudes.
Just guys being dudes, being men. Go ahead, Chops.
Yeah, player impressed the most for me, Damian Lillard, that 35 in the first half. And it's not just the 35 in the first half. And then at first you're reading, you're like, well, why didn't he score in the second half? Well, because they had built a nice enough lead. But it's important that he can do that with Giannis out, because that's something that was not available to them before. Giannis had to be they had good players around him, but I think Giannis had to be the complete engine in the playoffs. And they cruised to victory in game one. So I think he just really wants something, too, after so many years of kind of trying to get there in Portland, and then it all falls apart at the end. But to get somewhere, and they're yelling out, what time is it? And the whole crowd responds, Dame time, after he nails a three. Pretty cool stuff.
Just real quick to your point, if the Celtics don't win the damn East.
Yeah. Well, and everything, Dame's necessary because Giannis is out. And you have to remember, like, outside of Steph Curry, there's nobody over the last decade who's been more fun individually when they get hot than Damian Lillard. He's pure joy. Speaking of pure joy, maybe there is a young Turk who could be pure joy, and that's Anthony Edwards. He had 33-9-6 as they bludgeoned the Suns in game one, and he was running his mouth at Durant. I'm for all of that. They need that.
Future is now, old man.
Maybe. I like it. I thought that was very cool. That's a fun team to watch, and he can go. He went big in the opener. Disappointed, Reese. What player disappointed?
Disappointed in Pete Rose. He was at a baseball collector's convention in St. Paul over the weekend. Signed a bunch of baseballs. Sorry I bet on baseball. Ohtani is sorry, too. And I wish I had an interpreter. Like, shut the hell up,
Pete Rose. He wrote all of that?
Yeah, wrote them on baseballs.
I've long said
that multiple baseballs had those quotes on.
Had that inscription. I would say this. I've held firm on this for the longest time. I think you can make an argument that Pete Rose benefited more from being banned from baseball than if he hadn't. Because he has been in the news for 20, 30 years and has made a great deal. Now, do I think he wants to sign autographs for a living? No, probably not. But the notoriety, there's no question, has helped his bank account. And I don't know, like, if he continues to get chances managing. I don't know what type of manager he was, but I think you could make that argument. Chops, go ahead.
Yeah, Richard, I think that was a worthy one, but I don't know can we really be disappointed in Pete Rose anymore?
Like, just shut the hell up, Pete Rose.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, he's doing it again. For me, it's D'Angelo Russell. After all the talk last year about how he shrunk in the series against the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, and then he finds his way to stay on the Lakers roster, and he performs really well this year, and you say, okay, he is who we thought he was, and that was just a blip on the radar, and he's back to normal. Nope, shot worse than that percentage for the series last year. He was 1 of 9 from 3, 6 of 20 overall. The Lakers, they at first surprised me. They were up by double digits there in the second quarter, and then nope, the Nuggets are just a better team. I think that one's going to be done in 4.
That's one of those ones. It feels like when LeBron lost game one in the finals that year when J.R. Smith didn't realize the clock ran out.
Right.
Like, if the only chance they had was to win game one and then maybe. But then once they lose it, I'm with you. It feels like it could be very short. Speaking of the NBA, disappointed in all of the players. There was only one game in the first round that was decided by single digits. Oklahoma City and New Orleans. Everything else was beat down central. You mentioned Dame didn't even have to play in the second half because it was like, just push your chips in. Game's over. Push your chips in.
Thunder Pelicans was 94-92 on Sunday as well.
That's the one I mentioned. That's the only one I mentioned. That's the one. That's it. Everything else was beat downs.
Knicks 76ers was 111-104, sorry. So there were two.
Okay, there were two.
Just barely.
But largely beat downs throughout the weekend. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week, Reese.
Go with Guardians manager Stephen Vogt. Cleveland, despite losing Shane Bieber, not having Gavin Williams available, is off to their best start since the late 90s. That's 16-6, baby.
Are they real?
No, not need.
Not yet?
I mean, they've beaten up on the Athletics. They got the Red Sox this week. Obviously, you play who's in front of you, but they've been hitting a lot better earlier. I don't know if it's because they've been having to put faith in young guys to hit early for years now. And I don't know if it's Stephen Vogt pressing the right buttons, but you can't really argue with the results right now. Like, they're plus 38 in run differential.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, kind of tongue in cheek, Kalen DeBoer went out there and got the Lou Groza winner because he needed a kicker, which is kind of underwhelming for what we thought Alabama could do in this window. It's not over yet, but I'm gonna go a different direction and be a little more earnest. I'm gonna give it to honorary coach of the week to my mom because she said, "Well, what do you want for your birthday?" And I was like, "I want to, like, basically create a tailgate in the middle of the spring here. And she's like, okay, that can be done. And then it worked out. I watched the Michigan spring game, the Cavs, my rugby match, and then NBA stuff.
Oh, you did it this weekend.
So, yeah, so we did that this weekend. That's great. My birthday's on Wednesday. And the spread was great. There was a charcuterie board. There was 7-layer taco dip. So what else was there? There was a sandwich platter earlier in the day. We did burgers and brats at night. We had a cheesy potato, like casserole type thing. And my favorite, it's called crazy macaroni salad. It's like a sweeter pasta salad. I love it.
Good job. Good job out of Mama Chops. I'm going to go Brad Underwood. You say, wait a second. Whom? Yeah, the Illinois coach. Here's why. He signed or got Orlando Antigua back on his staff. Now, Orlando Antigua is probably one of the five best recruiters in college basketball. So he was with Cal twice, at Memphis, at Kentucky. Then he went and became a head coach. Then he was with Brad at Illinois, one of his first hires. Then he's been at Kentucky. Now he's back. That tells me Illinois basketball is serious about what they want to do under Underwood, and that will help immediately when it comes to their roster building going forward. Speaking of roster building, the NFL draft is this week. What's going to happen at the top? How far will Marv fall, if at all? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop & Friends right here on The Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were six. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop & Friends.
Boy, you want to talk about... Did you guys see the Denver Broncos uniforms? They unveiled them like 10, 15 minutes ago.
They look like Illinois.
Yeah. Is what they look like. It looks like you just said, hey, let's be Illinois. Like you're the Denver Broncos. They look like Illinois. Look exactly like Illinois.
Buy a Bronco now? A Ford Bronco?
I did. I do want one of those.
So like, yeah.
Take the top off and roll. But like, how can you not? First of all, and I don't see the Elway one. I don't see the Elway throwback. I know that they have that one, which is going to make everybody very happy. But in terms of the unveiling right now, it is, and then it's the classic like Nike nonsense about this diamond is for a peak in the mountains and it represents our altitude and the Rocky Mountain home.
The triangle perforations under the sleeve not only more boldly convey the thinning air at higher elevation, but are also a nod to Colorado summit markers. Sure.
This is a joke.
It's a triangle on the jersey.
It's a triangle, dude. Chill out.
You didn't invent triangles. Neither did mountains or Colorado or Denver or Broncos for that matter.
No. They look like Illinois.
And also,
I mean, you got to be so pissed off if you're a Broncos fan on this. The first eight different, all of the social media is negative. Should have just gone back to the classic orange and light blue. I'm going to read these. I'm going to try and, you know, make sure I don't say anything bad here. Broncos, why? It's just the helmet stripe is so gross. Broncos country, let's design. Might want to go back to the design room. Just embarrassing. These are half-assed and weak. Just getting bombed.
Jeff Goldblum looking at a gif of Dino Duty right there.
Just bombed.
Well, what I don't understand, too, is the arm sleeves. Like, they're in the AFC West. Correct me if I'm wrong. And that kind of has like a lightning bolt factor to it, and it's like your Chargers are a division rival.
Yeah, they just look like Illinois. It's exactly what it looks like to me. It just looks an Illinois uniform, and it speaks to a bigger and it just an incredible disconnect that we see between ownership, front offices, the uniform suppliers, and fans. This doesn't have to be this hard, Reese. Go ahead.
I just love the stupid stupid graphic design explainers. Triangles, disappearing triangles, disappearing triangle perforation in front and back numbers, nods to thinning air at higher elevations.
Yeah, it's like performance
vents. Triangle perforations under the sleeve not only more boldly convey the thinning air at higher elevation, but are also a nod to Colorado summit markers, outdoor performance gear aesthetics, and a connection to the legacy built from our three Super Bowl championships.
I've never...
Oh my God, in the video, they actually use an old Ford Bronco.
That's like what I'm saying.
Retro Bronco
more like
in the
a
video.
Car commercial than a uniform reveal.
They're named after a stallion?
I've never been to Denver, and I don't know anybody from there, but like, do the people there like really have that strong of attachment to the number 5,280? I understand that that's a mile in feet.
No, it's the Mile High City. Did you know that?
Like, the Nuggets have that on their court now. It is on the pants and the helmet on this Broncos jersey.
I think they've all, I mean, some of these are just dreadful. There is one. I mean, some of these combinations, this is like something you would have done like 15 years ago.
They have to have this for 10 years? You would unveil it.
Five. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to wear this. Everyone hates them, obviously. They're getting bombed. They're going to wear these for the minimum requirement, which is 5 years. And then they will go back to the Elway, original Elway orange jersey with the light blue hat, which is they have that throwback. I know that throwback's in this catalog. So then they'll just go back to that. But they're stuck in these for 5 years.
Yeah. And how long until they do a Browns color rush situation where they just make it what is technically an alternative at the, they try to wear it as much as they can, like the Browns did with that all brown uni for the last year or two of those.
So that happened in 2018. Or was it 19? It was Baker's first or second year where the uniform that they put out was so poorly received and they were so sick of it that they, when they did the color rush, they petitioned the NFL to make that their primary home uniform. And the NFL granted that because they had new uniforms that were coming out the following year. I think the Browns got their new uniforms in 2020 was, I think, when they went back to like the new old uniforms. And so they petitioned the NFL and the NFL granted it and allowed them to wear the color rush uniforms for the rest of that season.
That was that long ago? That seems so long. That doesn't seem like it should be that long. But I guess Baker was drafted.
Baker was 18 was his 18, first year.
Yeah,
19 was his.
And his
19
first,
was the second year.
His first real game would have been in that color rush too, because it was a Thursday night game.
Yes. Yeah. So they were aware. I mean, they hired somebody. The Browns hired somebody to come in and make that right. Like, they did it. The guy named Dave Freeman came out, and he was the guy who did We the North up in Toronto with the Raptors, and they hired him to come in and get it right. And then he got it right, along with ownership there. They got it right, and they went back to a traditional Browns look. That's the same thing that's going to happen here, because this is an unmitigated disaster. I also think it's amazing. It's almost like they knew it was going to be, because as of right now, they have not done... They haven't unveiled the Elway 80s throwback, and I know they have it.
Is this Fanatics' fault or Nike's fault?
Well, it'll be Fanatics' fault, because Nike was just called out for the Caitlin Clark one. They're just going to take turns calling.
Here's how this works. Nike says, "What do you want to do?" And typically what happens is ownership or people in charge of these type of things say, "I don't know, what do you think?" And then Nike goes, "Here's a bunch of stuff. Here's a bunch of stuff to look." And you could use Nike, you could use Adidas, Under Armour, whoever you want for uniform supply. It doesn't matter. This is the process. Ownership says, "We'd like a change." Manufacturer says, "What do you want?" Ownership, unless they know, says, "I don't know. What do you think? What are some things? Throw some stuff at us." Because that's usually what really wealthy people like, right? Throw a bunch of ideas my way and I'll see if I like any of them. So that's the way it works.
And then I'll take credit for all the ideas because I'm the one who selected them.
Yeah. So I'll get a look at it. Okay. And then pitches are made based on what you want. So the way that the Browns uniform thing happened in, I guess it would have been like 13 when they went to those crazy uniforms in that era, Kevin Griffin was big on that. He was in the front office at that time. And what they were going for, what they were sold was, let's go with a modernized Browns uniform. And so that's how they ended up with those uniforms, was that way. And they even pitched like, Nike was like, "Look, they're going to have cross stitching on this and the colors aren't going to, it's going to be so trendy." And immediately it was like, "Well, that's not it. That ain't it at all." And so you get out of it, but it takes 4 or 5 years to do it. So this is new ownership in Denver now. They probably want their own identity on it, but here's the disconnect. You bought the team. You did not buy its history. You did not buy its passion. You did not buy the brand. You did not buy the brand loyalty to the constituency. And that isn't for sale. That's there no matter what. You are stewards of the organization. That's what you are. And so when you think about, "Well, we want to have our own look," nobody gives a damn about that. The fans don't care. The fans want the Broncos to look like the damn Broncos. They don't want them to look like Illinois. And that's what you did.
Yeah. And the other thing, like, because we were making fun of the the graphic and how it explained all this is because of mountains and stuff. And it's like, you guys are overthinking it. It's not about like what can be the coolest. You know what the stripe on the John Elway jerseys that we were talking about was? Because it was a stripe. And you put stripes on jerseys and it was in the colors of the Broncos.
Yeah.
Nobody came out and explained why there was the D on the helmet stands for Denver. We just get it. If it has to be explained, then it's not working.
Congratulations. You look like Illinois. Good job out of that. The NFL draft is this week. We'll go under some of the things that are trending leading into it. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead.
Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes.
The Fan.
Us.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
I mean, just universally panned. Like, just bombed it. These Broncos unis. Crushed.
Do you think, like, they have to do, like, focus groups? Do they just bring in people who are, like, afraid to be critical in front of them? Or do they just do it?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know how it works on that front. I mean, usually it's a... I guess usually the thinking is you're working amongst experts, right? Like, you are an expert. You've been very successful. Like, this is Walmart money. Like, how many things have they gotten wrong through the years? Or at least if they are wrong, how many things are they called on? You know, are there wrong things called upon? So, like, probably lived a life that has been one never-ending boulevard of green lights. So, like, if you like it, then it must be right. Look what Woody Johnson did with the Jets. I mean, they just did this. The Falcons just did similar. It's hard to screw up black and red, and they did. So, like, you just miss. Now, Woody got it mostly right with the wearing the sack exchange ones now, but... I think that's so. It starts there, and then you figure to yourself, well, I've hired really smart people to work here, right? That'd be my president or my people in my front office who are going to be the ones that are going to be part of this process. And then I've got Nike designers, and they got to be the best. So you just, this seems like this works. But to not have like some sort of fan representation is an abject failure, to not have some sort of feedback, because there's not a, you cannot tell me that there's a fan of the Denver Broncos who are like, yeah, green light those.
Yeah, that's
what I can't imagine there's even one.
That's what I feel like is the difference, is like when you're talking about somebody coming from Walmart or just really just any most general businesses, is that you're selling to convenience and to price for people, and that's what gets people to want your product, but you're selling to passion when it comes to sports fans. And it's not the same way. It's not just a formula that you can put in the inputs and get the correct answer to. It's more of a feel thing, and that's why we see this every time they put out these jerseys where they don't seem to take the fan accounts into, you know, take the fans' opinions into account enough, that they just fail right on arrival. Like, they are immediate. All of these ones that people don't like just get panned right away, and the only ones that don't get panned are the classic uniforms.
It feels like when you're doing this now, or at least when the Browns did it, I'm always surprised. I guess I shouldn't be surprised at the stupidity of some of these teams that don't just go to their fans with some options and say, or like, you get a focus group and say, do you like this? And if the entire room says no, then maybe go, okay, let's.
Look, they want to do the reveal. So that's, I think, but you could easily just do a thing to your fans and say, what do you want out of the new uniforms? What do you think the Denver Broncos should look like?
Because how many times have teams hit on a reveal recently that you can remember?
Chargers, Browns, Bengals.
Browns reveal was a fixer of the last reveal.
Sure, yeah, but they made it. They got it right.
How many of those hitters are not, at the very least, very reminiscent of a uniform that already existed in the past? Who has actually come out with a new one that people have been like, yes, this is the one?
It does seem like the Lions black or anthrike or whatever that color is, anthrike. It feels like that one has been pretty positively received, but it's a good point. I don't know that. I mean, the Texans are going to get bombed with theirs too, because they wanted the H-Town blue, and they're not going to get it. So
they don't have anything classic to fall back on then too. Yeah.
No, but everybody wanted that light blue jersey. It sounds like that jersey is going to be blue. It's going to be navy blue with just a light blue pinstriping, basically looking like the Titans. So. No, you're right. That's a good question. I don't know that it's ever a new version of a classic brand is almost never liked. There's a reason for it. That uniform is uniformity.
Yes.
You want your teams to look like the way that you want them to look. And that's why largely they're panned. I think you know, Ohio State, while I'm not a fan of all of the things they've done through, with the uniforms through the years, and I would love to see the Grayback on the sleeves permanently on the home uniform, they don't do it all the time. Like, it's if they wear the, if they go black out, gray out, white out, red out, it's a one-off. You know, it's not like you see it regularly, but some, I mean, this is now the regular Broncos uniform. This is it.
Did Vikings,
and they look like Illinois.
Did Vikings fan, they're kind of okay with their current uniforms. They had the Reebok ones under Peterson, and then they switched again. But it is sort of like just an abstract representation of the original uni.
I think the Vikings is probably what you said earlier, which is a get back to what they're supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Just a modern interpretation of the original uniform. So, No, I think that's a very good point in terms of who's nailed a new rebrand, and they just be like,
and we just you see, I don't know, it's hilarious because you see what nostalgia does. You see the money that's made in nostalgia.
Oh yeah,
like just do that. People love
powerful.
It.
Powerful.
Stop playing with Fanatics. Play with Homage. Have them make your uniforms.
Yeah, have them do it. They'll get it right.
They've
I promise
got
you.
Like a Barry Sanders. Starter jacket like they've collaborated with that looks really cool. They're doing like 144 of them. If you get a second, like take a look at that thing.
It's the light blue, and it's got the silver Sanders and 20 on the back. But they haven't done the full reveal yet, right? It's revealing later.
I've seen the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Well, they've done the full reveal. I'm not in on any of these meetings, so they have it up online.
I think it drops. Well, they did one on the 25th this week, though, officially.
When you can buy it.
Yeah.
They did one with Jackie Robinson, too, that was really cool for his anniversary of breaking into the bigs. So they've done some cool ones. NFL draft is this week. There's a lot to get to on it. Quarterbacks are going to be at the top. My rule of thumb with the draft when it comes to draft week is it usually reverts back to what you thought 3 months ago or what was common knowledge 3 months ago. And my hunch is that's what happens on Thursday night as well. If you go back to coming out of the college football regular season, out of the bowl games, Caleb Williams, number one, Drake May, number two, Jaden Daniels, number three. I think that holds. I do think Marvin's going to end up in Arizona, although we'll see if there is. I know that bid is for sale. Could it be a situation where these new Denver Broncos or potentially Minnesota moves up to four, but then potentially would Arizona move back into five to get Marv? That seems very much in play. I saw the comments from Paris Johnson over the weekend about would love to have Marv in Arizona. Marv doesn't say a lot, but that would obviously be a place he'd probably like to go to. Good receiver lineage with Larry Johnson there. Pass-happy offense. A quarterback who's going to throw it a little bit. Personally, the Chargers thing would be ideal, like Herbert would be to be that guy if he could fall to five. But it seems like the Chargers have a lot more on their plate than just receiver in terms of trying to get that roster back. And it seems like Harbaugh wants to add a bunch of players this offseason to make up for all of their losses. But typically this week, guys, it reverts back to what you thought all the way back in January, what you thought at the combine. The truth is always told at the combine. My hunch is that's the way this plays out this week.
Yeah, for the last 2 weeks, the only thing that I really thought was like real movement that like, okay, this guy has, for whatever reason, through the process, changed some people's opinions or gotten people just enough more information that they felt comfortable with J.J. McCarthy moving up. I do think he is going to be a higher draft pick than we would have thought a few months ago. And if quarterbacks go back to back to back, then somebody will likely trade up for him, whether that's the Chargers at five, the Cardinals at four, or somewhere else in the top 10. I think that's something that's real, but all the other stuff, it does seem like the normal draft smokescreen, and it's probably going to hold to what we want. But who is going to be the first team to move up? And it feels like that's likely going to be for a quarterback this year because, I mentioned the Chargers and the Cardinals, but the Patriots have also been, at the very least, open to the idea. The Commanders have kind of shut it down. They're like, we're sticking with our pick. We're not giving it up. But the Patriots at three still might move it up. And what would that do? But it still kind of just feels like a draft, which again, this is something we had months ago that doesn't start until pick four.
Yeah, it does. By the way, I believe we had this on they do have the classic.
I'm just looking at that. Those are gorgeous.
So this is my theory now, fellas, on this. I think they knew the new uniforms were going to bomb, and so they unveiled those first, and then held this back as a, well, we got this part right, because they knew these were going to be.
I just make it permanent.
These are perfect. Like, this is what they should look like, clearly, and that's my hunch. So they excuse me, unveiled the new ones first. New ones bomb, panned universally. They wait 15 minutes, and then they do the classics, and now these are universally beloved. So this is the Mecklenburg Elway, you know, 70s.
They're even better 70s or 80s uniforms. In comparison to the other reveal.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You're right.
Yeah. So it's like, look, we got this part right. We knew you're going to hate this, but we did get this part right. And that's, I think that's, don't you think?
Why isn't Nike's philosophy shifted when they approach these teams to just say, hey, it really feels like sales wise and, you know, reaction wise, the classics looks better. So maybe we'll try that.
All right. Here's my theory. Nike sells more uniforms because people will still buy these ones that are panned. They're going to sell the one off. And then when they go to the new, when they go back to these permanently, which they will do in 4 or 5 years, when that happens, then they'll sell more.
You can sell twice the amount of jerseys over 10 years if they hate one for 5 years.
That's right. If you hate these, because you go around, there's still a lot of that ridiculous, like, Cleveland script uniform, like you had a Browns game. You still see those. Like, you spend a lot of money on a jersey, right? You don't want to, you're not going to not wear it.
Yeah.
That's my theory on it anyway. Boy, those. I think they knew. They knew, and you let them off the hook. That's what I think. All right, three things on a Monday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
Your mama say you ugly, hey!
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Producers, co-hosts, friends, some of those things are true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese. What do we have on the poll?
Daily fan poll sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's fan poll asks, what pick will quarterback J.J. McCarthy be drafted in Thursday's first round? 59% say he'll be taken with the 8th pick or later. 5 through 7, 21%. 3 through 4, 14. And about 5% of y'all think he'll be taken with the 2nd overall pick.
5 through 7, was it? Or where did 4?
I don't think
was
he's
4 not
it.
One of the options?
4 was. 3 or 4 was 14%.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't think he's getting so to that 8-plus range.
No, it feels like 4 or 5. It feels like if Arizona doesn't take the bait, then it feels like the Chargers would.
Somebody's likely going to trade, yeah, with one of those two teams.
Yeah. Honestly, his best chance for me, if his best chance for success would be Minnesota. Like, you could hop in there right now. I know they have Sam Darnold, but he could hop in there and sit for a year behind Darnold if he wants. Hard to think Sam is, like, a guy you'd want to sit behind because he's still pretty young himself. But they have Jefferson. They have Addison. Like, I mean, to me, that and that offense would fit him. One that would fit his skill set and one that's similar to the one that they've run it, similar to the one in San Francisco, the one in Cleveland, where just throw it where we tell you to throw it, man. It's open. Don't overthink it. We've schemed it open. Throw it there. And that would be a good spot for him. All right, time for three things.
Three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
All right, number one for me was taking NBC to school this morning and was listening to Bob and Beam, and they had a legislator on from Nelsonville, and they're talking about the OHSAA and some of the things he's trying to do to get a handle on their for-profit enterprise, even though it's a non-profit. And as we were listening, NBC says, so, Dad, does that mean that I can't make NIL in Ohio in high school? Yeah. That's what it means, buddy, and I'm glad you're thinking that way. Hopefully it all works out, and you get a little Warrior lacrosse sponsorship by the time you get in high school, and we can have to make those decisions to go to a prep school.
First one for me, I had seen this stat earlier, but then I saw it again, and I was like, oh, you know what? I have to let J-Lo know about this. Times a team named Jets have scored 7 in a playoff game last 13 years. Winnipeg, hockey, 2 times. New York, football team. 0 times. And I sent it to J-Lo. I said, I'm sorry to have to do this to you. And she just sent back a gif of Pedro Pascal. Looks like he's at some sort of award ceremony and he's laughing. And then it kind of morphs into a little bit of a sob. It must have been something that was bittersweet. And that's how she feels about that. So that's good. But I had to pass that along.
The Athletic surveyed 133 anonymous NBA players and asked them who the greatest player of all time is. Michael Jordan led with 45.9%, LeBron James second with 42%, Kobe Bryant 9.8%, Steph Curry, Magic Johnson, and Paul Pierce got 0.8% of respondents. So I guess I'll rephrase the first part. 132 anonymous players and Paul Pierce were asked who's the greatest player of all time.
So 0.8%, is that what you said?
Yeah.
That's probably
one. It probably was one vote. Yeah, and that's absurd. That is absolutely absurd. Number two for me, I mentioned we had lacrosse all weekend long. We were, I want to thank Olivia, Coach Myers at Ohio State Lacrosse, as we took the whole group there, and it was awesome. It was packed house on a Saturday night. It was a little brisk. They ended up losing by one. It was and they furious comeback to cut it to one. They had the ball in possession under a minute to go, called a timeout, and weren't able to capitalize to try to send it into overtime as they did the previous weekend against Johns Hopkins. But the moral of the story here, though, is they built a first-class operation in terms of the stadium, the experience, all of it. It's a really cool facility, and it's one of many that Gene Smith has overseen at Ohio State, and it was a very enjoyable Saturday night.
My parents have a two TV set up in their living room now. My brother actually got them a TV for Christmas because he was tired of them bringing a TV from a different room during football season. But now they've kept it there full time. And I was down there and I had, like I said, I had the Michigan game on, I had the Cavs game on. I said to J-Lo, I was like, see, this is the future. And I was kind of joking to just justify the fact that we've had two TVs for a number of years now. But in a more serious way, it is. If you're serious about watching sports, it really feels like you need two TVs now. And I wonder how much more that's going to be the norm. And if we start to see more designs from like the actual businesses that create TVs or entertainment centers or what have you, of like, here's how you can combine them and things can look better together. Because I think that is going to be a big deal going forward because TVs are so affordable now.
It's the quad box, right?
It is. And I do wonder, like, Why there hasn't been a, like on the big TVs, how there hasn't been some sort of technology where you can control half the screen with one remote, half the screen with another, or they're all of the screen with one.
Yeah, because the quad
box, that technology exists. I don't know.
The quad box is good on YouTube, but it usually selects the four for you, and you have to find the one that works best for you.
Four is hard for me. I find that one almost distracting, like trying to watch four things on one screen.
That's why I like the two TVs, too, because I put them on either side of the room so I can look at one or the other and turn really focus. Head.
So I'll make this my second thing, hoping that because the NBA has until midnight tonight to do its new media rights deals, and I'm hoping Amazon not only stays in it but gets it or gets at least a piece of it, and then they get some of baseball. You already pay for Prime. If you can get a quad box of, like, say, a Guardians Cavs, like, Saturday afternoon or something with it happened at this past Saturday where you had the Cavs on, you had the Guardians starting, you had the Michigan spring game, like, all that quad box, I'm here for it.
Here's what's going to happen. If they get all that stuff, they're going to charge you for it.
Yeah, it'll be an additional charge.
You're paying for Prime, that's fine.
Yeah, they're going to say Prime, and then it's going to take Prime Plus in order to watch your sports. Real quickly for me, number three, kind of in between shows, waiting for Shogun to end, so I didn't want to jump anything new at this point. And so I watched a couple episodes of the first season of White Lotus, and the newlywed husband in that, the first time I watched it during the pandemic, I thought, this guy's a total crud. In rewatch, he's 100% right. I'm pro that guy. I'm anti Armand. That dude had a point on everything that he brought up was legitimate. I don't blame him one bit.
Well, yeah, and then you as you go through the series, too, you learn about Armand. It's not like he's on the up and up. Anyways, last one for me. I got my Hawaiian shirt for Thursday at the Memorial this weekend. So it will premiere here in, 6 weeks or so whenever we're out there. And I'm not telling you what to do, and I'm not going to tell you what the surprises I am. However, inviting whoever wants to join me and is brave enough to wear a Hawaiian shirt Thursday at Mirfield. It's pretty simple. You just wear a Hawaiian shirt instead of a golf polo. But if I see you out there and you're in your Hawaiian shirt, I'll give you a nod.
Tom Brady's getting roasted live on Netflix Sunday, May 5th. They announced this morning that Kevin Hart's going to host it and be the roaster of ceremonies, and it's going to be uncensored.
Okay.
So
I like it. I like it. All right. Rothman and Ice up next. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice has a large tattoo on his calf of LeBron eating a lion.
I have nothing else to say.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. This is a Fan Action Update.
This Action Update is brought to you by Tipico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The Cavs are back in action for Game 2 of their series with the Magic. Cleveland is -220 on the money line and a 5.5-point favorite tonight. Looking to go up 2-0 in the series. Some point totals for tonight's game. Donovan Mitchell's over-under points is 25.5, and Darius Garland is 15.5 for your Tipico Action Update. I'm Scotty Vegas.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Hunt
Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. The Ohio State basketball team lost another player to the transfer portal yesterday as center Felix Akpara announced he was leaving. Akpara, who would be a junior, averaged 6.6 points a game, 6.4 rebounds, and 2.4 blocks. A player who was already in the portal, Roddy Gale, has a new team as he is committed to Michigan. The Guardians with an off day today after sweeping the A's over the weekend. They start a series with the Red Sox tomorrow. The Reds, coming off of a sweep as well, start a series with the Phillies at Great American Ballpark tonight. First pitch at 6:40. Three games in the NBA playoffs tonight, including Game 2 of the Cavaliers series with the Orlando Magic. 7 p.m. tip in Cleveland. And the NHL playoffs continue as well this evening with four games. This one's sponsored by Nature Stone. Schedule your free cost estimate today at naturestone.com. It's not just a floor.